Hey, what's up, man?
Yes.
Hey, how you doing? Recording, man.
Stop right on.
All right. Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. How you doing, Sam?
Thank God it's Friday, Earl.
Yeah. Did you get out to enjoy the weather yesterday?
Yes. How about yourself?
Absolutely.
So refreshing.
Absolutely. It was, you know, I can't wait. You know, tomorrow will be, you know, a teaser. You know, 78 degrees is somewhere around
well,
there.
Well, you know, yesterday it was 68.
Yeah, I know. But 78 is just, and the wind won't be blowing.
Watch me complain about being too hot. I'm sorry.
Hey, that's my sidekick, Sandy Williams. It's Friday. How you doing, Sandy?
I'm doing pretty well. I took that walk along the lake that you and I have done.
Really?
Yeah, I went about 5 miles.
How nice was the lakefront?
Oh, it was great. I went up and looked at all the beautiful houses.
You should have called me.
Well, yeah.
What time about did you do it?
11 o'clock.
Yeah, I would have.
11:30.
Well, you know, if we hang around, if we're blessed with an opportunity to hang around a little longer, you and I—that's one of the most scenic parts of, I think, the city of Milwaukee, right?
You mean the part where there isn't anything but water?
No. Yeah. I mean, the water is nice.
Yeah,
but
no, it's beautiful.
Just for people who haven't seen it. Milwaukee and that lakefront is beautiful, right?
Yeah, I stopped and watched a bee pollinating a little blue flower.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Everything's coming up.
Yeah, it finally is, and so it's safe to say. So when do they say you can start planting flowers after in May, I think it is? What is the special day? Mother's Day or something like that? No, it's a special time. I forgot what it is. But, you know, got a couple things to talk about before we get into it. You and I were talking about the Bucks, you know, and you asked me if I was giving up on them.
Well, no, I suggested you were giving up on them.
And you know what?
Yeah.
Yes, I am. You know what it appears to me when I'm watching them and I'm watching other teams? They pass the ball, they move the ball, the other teams. The guy doesn't have to dribble and create his own shots. And so the more they pass the ball, the more the next guy is open, the more he's getting an open shot.
Yeah.
You notice the Bucks, it's, you know, the guy who gets it has to dribble around and try to create his own shot, right? Have you noticed that?
Well, I think he dribbles to draw the attention to him so he can get it off to Giannis ultimately.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing is lined up to basically try and get Giannis
yes.
into at least a one-on-one and or better. But, yeah, you know, you go to games like when I go and sit in my seat and watch the games, I watch the other teams whip the ball all around the periphery until they get until the ball gets ahead of the defense, and then the shot goes in.
And it's a much higher percentage shot, and the guys don't have to work as hard as one guy, right? I mean, you know, I'm not, you know, looking to crucify the Bucks. I love the Bucks, you know, but you know, it's tougher. I watched a game last night between the Grizzlies and Minnesota Timberwolves. Both really young, athletic teams.
Yeah, well, you know, 2 years ago, who were they, right?
Yeah, I know. But these teams have finished so low, and the way the NBA is structured, the lower you finish, the higher draft choices you're going to get. And that really has worked, right? I mean.
Oh, sure. Well, it works in football, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no question that, I mean, that's how the Bucks have tried to do it. You know, our first draft choices, when we had Bogut, I guess we didn't quite get what we hoped for.
Right. And, you know, if you go back many years, when Marcus Johnson, you know, they wound up with three picks that one year, Dave Myers, Ernie Grunfeld, and I think it was Marcus Johnson was in amongst those three.
Yeah, ends. Yeah, he was.
Yeah, and those were lottery picks and those kinds of things. They really got it figured out right. But there's sometimes that, you know, it doesn't work, and that's Golden State, which, you know, had a lot of great talent around it. And then wound up trading, what's the guy's name, Durant, and got, you know, three or four high draft choices, and they've added just great young talent around Curry and others. So, I mean, they're just, you know, stacked. Mm-hmm. But the Bucks aren't going to be able to move.
Well, I'm not all the way to giving up on the Bucks.
I know.
Although, you know, the thing is, they do run hot and cold, and they've tended to have trouble during streaks during the playoffs, and, you know, until last year, the trouble got them out of the playoffs.
Right.
But last year they had a couple of tough series, at least one, earlier on in the process. So, you know, if they get past the Bulls, they get their shooting eyes back. My problem in watching the Bucks is when they're cold, they're cold.
Oh, they're cold.
Yeah,
and they're horrible.
Yeah, and well, you know, the difference was I looked at the shooting percentages, though, and they were like 44%. The other team was 48%, so 49. So it wasn't that big a difference, but they had trouble with turnovers. They had 16 turnovers, and Holiday had 6 of them. So
that's their biggest Achilles heel, is the fact that they turn the ball over so much, and that's because they don't have a natural point guard. You know, we were talking about that, you know, before the show.
Mm-hmm.
A natural point guard, great point guards that you have all over the NBA, little quick whippets.
Well, I think Javon Carter is supposed to be that guy.
He's not a great.
No, but he is a quick.
Yeah,
he's that sort of that's his tendency.
Yeah, but he's not a weapon.
Yeah.
You know, they've got point guards that are weapons.
Yeah.
Too, and the Bucks don't have that. And the other part of it, Sandy, is, you know, there's an old axiom. Live by the jump shot, die by the jump shot. And the Bucks shoot a lot of threes. And threes are a lower percentage shot, right? I mean, in the end.
Well, they've done, you know, the numbers guys, the people who play, you know, like the baseball, the money ball kind of analysis suggests that threes are where the game needs to be.
Yeah.
They actually, from a standpoint of production of points, they are not a low percentage shot.
Well, you know,
you only have to shoot about 36% or 37% on a three to have it be a better opportunity than a two.
Yeah. Well, that's if you wind up with wide open threes. If you're going to be having threes and you're challenged with the threes, the percentage goes down even more. That's where the moving of the ball that you're talking. So people probably are wondering. We can't believe those guys know anything about basketball. Well,
let me confess. I know nothing about basketball.
Yeah. We were both around a little bit when they put the – who was the guy who put the peach crate up?
The double tree double day? No, was baseball.
Yeah. We know. You and I know. The guy who created basketball.
Yeah, whatever.
And they would not even allow – You know, I remember you could stay in the lane. There was no such thing as 3 seconds. Wilt Chamberlain changed all of that because he was such a dominant guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, okay. But I know we'll move on. But I just had to let it out. Sandy, I'm giving up hope.
Oh, God. People, we need callers. Well, we need some encouraging callers.
Sandy, here's the other part of it.
Giannis, call in.
Middleton is out
Giannis
for
is
a month.
Listening.
Middleton is out for a month.
Oh, is he? I didn't know.
Yes.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, he's out for a month.
With his injury?
Yes. Yes.
He
strained his whatever that thing is. And so he's out for a solid month.
Oh.
If they're lucky.
Oh.
So you look down the list, I would say clearly they're now going to start Grayson Allen.
Well, yeah, or Nawara's going to play a lot more, I suppose.
Oh, come on.
That's
my point.
Yeah.
You got to look down, and I would think playing Grayson Allen more, not Nawara. But Grayson Allen more can kind of help them. He's going to have to play a lot of minutes. It means Cunnington is going to play even more minutes. And it may be better off for them in the long run because now those two guys will get more shots because Middleton is not there.
Hmm. I was saying Middleton is cold. You know, I mean, when he's cold, he's cold. But when he's on the bench, he's really cold.
Yeah. The other part of all of this is, you know, they haven't played the other guy, the big guy that they got from. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the Georgian.
Yes,
Sharam Kazavida.
You know, I don't know why they don't. It just at least try. You know,
I think his defense is suspect when he's played. I think he's got a problem on the defensive end.
Yeah, I know.
I think a big guy, if he can't play defense, it's a big problem.
You think Middleton doesn't have problems with defense?
Yeah. Well, they might try their big. They could play their big team with Portis.
I'm thinking that's what they need to try. They're going to have to try something else.
Yeah.
But anyway, where are we at? We're about ready to go to a break before we change the conversation. Now, Sandy, a lot to talk about. What is this, Friday?
It's Friday.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for reminding me.
Yeah.
Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Right on. The Earl Ingram Show, as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, so there's a conversation that our government is now talking about, you know, $1.5, $3 million of aid.
Billion.
Billion, yeah. That they are going.
It's hard to get those B's and M's.
That they are going to, you know, send to Ukraine, and at the Chuck Schumer is saying, "Hey, wait a minute. If you're going to do that, we need money for COVID aid. You know, we can't just cut off everything financially." With COVID, it's not over, but Republicans have refused to add any additional funds for COVID. And so they want to tie this in. This is how government works, right? I mean, you don't want to help us with anything. We both agree that we need to do this, but you're going to have to tie this in.
Well, you know, we've talked about how foreign affairs end up being very expensive, and we decide who, you know, we don't quite understand how we decide who we ally with or when we get involved with military matters. But when we do get involved, boy, the wallet gets opened and the money flows. This is going to be the $1.3 billion that's coming with the $500 million of financial aid and $800 million of military support. But this is going to add up to like $3.5 billion in the space of 6 weeks. And so that's spilling money at a pretty rapid rate, particularly when it wasn't budgeted in the first place. So apparently we've got room in our defense budget. My understanding on this last round is that Congress will have to act in order to authorize more money from this point on because they've sort of run out of the slush fund or whatever it is they draw money from. But what we've talked about is how it is that our defense money seems to be spent with an open checkbook, and the money that relates to, you know, the people of the United States in terms of providing benefits to them, whether it be child support, child daycare, COVID aid, all of that money's kind of tight. You know, COVID, we did open our checkbooks pretty rapidly for. Now because it's become political, it's going to be harder to find money for it, I think. But just look at the rate at which we spend money without any question with respect to defense expenditures. And when it comes down to other kinds of public support, social safety net kind of stuff, boy, we're short on money then.
You know, Chuck Schumer said he wants to combine new Ukraine aid with funding to address COVID-19 and food insecurity. Talks over a COVID funding bill fell apart when the Republicans demanded amendment votes on Biden's decision to end certain restrictions at the U.S.-Mexico border. So that's the game you're talking about. So the Republicans, when the conversation about additional COVID aid, the Republicans said, yeah, let's deal with the border. Right? I mean, we can't separate things, can we?
Yeah, well, it's all about trying to figure out how to get more leverage. So they figure they've got leverage now for food support or whatever we're talking about. So now let's focus on the border. We just can't seem to get a triage going that relates to domestic wellness programs, essentially the kinds of things that support the people of the United States who are maybe behind the eight ball.
You know, here's an article in The Nation this morning. The Pentagon is cashing in on the Ukraine crisis. You talked about this. You said it was coming.
Yep.
They haven't wasted any time, have they?
Well, you can't waste time. You got to strike while the iron is hot. You know, and the iron during the period of conflict. Just well, when you think about it, we've given essentially $2.8 billion of military aid. That's all been spent on stuff coming from the United States.
Right.
And there are people selling it to the United States. So there's $2.8 billion of rapid transactions, probably unbid transactions. You know, there's no question that military matters, and particularly periods of emergency military matters, are very profitable.
Well, here's the CEO of Raytheon, Greg Hayes, is bragging that the prospect of conflict in Eastern Europe and other global hotspots would be good for business. How do you?
You're supposed to think that.
I know.
He should look in the mirror and say, "Did I think that or say that?"
Well, he said it.
He said it. Yeah.
But my thing is, for a person to be that arrogant, you and I know that that's what many of them are thinking.
Well, it's
but
not.
But how do you?
Well, it's not just what they're thinking. It's what I think lots of people in America are coming to realize, that the military-industrial establishment that Dwight Eisenhower warned us about...
It's been here.
Been here, and that's the way they think, right? That having tension in the world is good for business. And having a little hot war going someplace in the world, which reminds everyone about the great tension that requires military expenditure to make sure that the United States can dominate in a period of potential risk, that's what the Cold War was. That's what's very profitable for the whole industry that relates to the military-industrial complex. And to me, I guess it's taken me a long time, but I'm becoming worried and cynical about the fact that for the last 60 years, we have failed to take heed with what Dwight Eisenhower, a five-star military general and a president, two-term president of the United States, warned us about. He had lots of insight.
Yeah, he did.
And he told us this was going to happen or might happen, and take heed, be careful. And did we? No.
Well, you know, Sandy, that money is flowing so regularly. And the worst part about all of it to me is, now you can't trust. It's hard to trust the military, government, and the finances. I'm saying the fact that we know this is happening, and they can talk about waste in other parts of government, but there's more money that the military had, the Pentagon has, that they waste because they don't know what to do with it already.
Well, you know, when the USSR fell, some people were calling it Pax Americana, the peace of the American peace for the world, because America was the last great power standing.
Right.
And so we would run around the world and police the world.
Yes.
And make sure that the world was a democratic place. Well, I'm not sure that we did that last part, but we did run around and police, and we did make sure that our military kept very actively involved. We didn't raise taxes, but we had a 20-year war in Afghanistan and an extended period, an adventure in Iraq. which didn't succeed in spreading democracy at all to those places. But the list of adventures that the United States has been involved in since 1950, in terms of, or 1960, since that warning, is extensive. And the amount of money that was spent to support a military to be able to do that was extensive. And my fear is that this whole military-industrial complex doesn't just affect the military budget, it affects our foreign affairs. Because in order to justify a big military budget, you have to have a couple of standing enemies.
You know, Sandy, I was having a debate with a guy on the other side of things, and Republican guy, and he was saying to me, Biden left all of that military armament in Afghanistan. I said, every president leaves the armament, our military armament, wherever they are. It costs too much money to try to bring it back. It slows everything down, and then it opens up the accounts to buy more up-to-date new weapons, right?
Yeah.
We don't mind leaving all that weaponry.
Well, actually, the 18 helicopters we just sent to Ukraine were 18 helicopters that were otherwise going to go to Afghanistan.
Oh, so hold that thought. Got to come back. Sandy Williams is here, 844-967-2789. We'll be back. So... Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, we were talking about the arms and all of those things, and arms to Ukraine, profits to contractors. The war in Ukraine will indeed be a bonanza for the likes of Raytheon and Lockheed Martin. First of all, there will be contracts to resupply weapons. That's what I was just talking about before the break. Raytheon Stinger anti-aircraft missile and the Raytheon Lockheed Martin produced Javelin anti-tank missiles that Washington has already provided to Ukraine by the thousands. The biggest stream of profits, however, will come from assured post-conflict increases in national security spending here and in Europe, justified at least in part by the Russia's invasion and the disasters that followed. Look, I don't know how many weapons we have, and you know, thousands.
I don't think the Defense Department knows how many weapons we have, probably.
But they do know what's the latest technology, and technology continues to advance. And so we're always looking
I think the salivation in the mouths of the defense industry for this whole Ukraine thing must be almost at embarrassing levels, because European countries that had MiGs are transferring the MiGs to Ukraine, which is something Ukraine needs. But now those countries are all going to be buying U.S. aircraft. And NATO is, you know, NATO does have armaments that come from some of the NATO countries, but the bulk of NATO armaments come from the United States. So we've got you got Germany increasing its defense expenditures up to 2% of its GDP. We've got replacement of all this weaponry that's been transferred to Ukraine. That's all going to be purchased. It's not being these manufacturers are not donating these things. Our government might be donating them, but they're buying them in order to make the donation. And then we've got the United States announcing that we're going to increase our defense budget and continue to modernize, which means getting rid of we've got that whole group of sleek and quick ships that were built in the last 15 years, some of them up in Manitowoc, Wisconsin, which are already being mothballed, including the USS Milwaukee, which makes my heart...
you know, Sandy, you don't want to believe these things, but you almost, again, have to believe that, you know, people making money off death? I mean, that's really what this is. You know, that's the business, right? If people aren't dying, you know, you can't make the profit.
Well, I'm sure that the munitions industry justifies it by saying these are defensive weapons designed to make sure that fewer Americans die when we send them off to war because we've got all this modern weaponry. So, you know, everyone justifies in their mind the goodness of what they're doing. But there's no question that the American military-industrial complex has a grip on our political processes to the point where we spend such a significant percentage. We spend 4+% of our GDP on military. We have a huge GDP, by far the biggest GDP in the world, and we're spending this significant percentage. There's only a couple of countries in the world that spend more, and it's only because they have such small GDPs, Russia being one of them, you know, which is, I think, 11th in the world in its GDP, and it's trying to keep up with the United States. We're paying 4% of our GDP, and our GDP is four times the size.
You know, Sandy, the more you look at all of these things, the more you just realize this is just the beginning. Because, again, the more you look at this war, it's going to be a long war, right? There's nothing saying, and the American people better get ready for it. They somehow think this is going to be quick.
Yeah, this is like, as far as the defense industry is concerned, this is like open sesame. Whatever that means. I hope it's politically correct. But Pandora's box is open, and they've got this opportunity now with tensions. We can talk about the tensions with Russia. We can talk about the tensions with China. We can talk about Taiwan. We can talk about the need to demonstrate our might so that we have the deterrent effect of having such a powerful military that no one will dare to do the things which they're currently daring to do. I think this is a terrifying prospect for lots of domestic policies that need to be considered. This is a terrifying prospect for the safety nets of, for instance, getting the solvency into our Social Security system. The fact that we're going to now looking at not only not cutting back on defense expenditures, which have gotten way out of control, but we're looking at enlarging them.
So let me ask you, Sandy, it's been nonstop griping about the budget deficit in this country, getting worse and worse and worse. And we can't move, we can't do anything because the budget deficit, we're mortgaging our children's future. So we can't move, we can't do this. But now we're getting ready, as you stated, to open up Pandora's box.
Yeah.
And the budget deficit is going to really be increased. Well, unless they cut back on what?
Well, unless they raise taxes. Like I pointed out, the Vietnam War was the first time with Richard Nixon's brilliance where we drove the concept was guns and butter. So we didn't raise taxes during the Vietnam War. We just increased deficits to finance it that way. And ever since then, we have never decided that it was necessary to increase taxes to support the huge expenditures, essentially the financial hemorrhage that is associated with warfare. We spent $1 trillion in the Mideast, over $1 trillion. That's you know, half of the federal budget.
So I remember George Bush the first, after the first war in Iraq, and at the end of it, he said, "We made a profit on this one." And I never will forget those words. We made a profit on this one.
I can't recall. They must have taken things from Iraq during the process of the sweep. It used to be that the Roman legions, you know, were not paid money. They were just paid out of the booty that they got when they plundered. And so they were encouraged to plunder because that was their way of getting paid. And that was sort of the way it worked right up until about 1500 or 1600.
So, Sandy, it's not just that.
Maybe it's that way again.
It's not just that they're talking about, the military and increasing the budget on it for the next year. we're talking about years, right?
Well, tell me this. How often in your adult life do you recall them ever announcing that they have reduced the military budget? It never goes down.
Right.
Yeah. It's politically impossible. It might go down $30 billion, which sounds like a lot of money, but when the denominator is $780 billion.
So let me ask you, that 750 billionaires or so who in this country who in a pretty safe financial situation, are they going to be okay with having the taxes raised or are they not going to be a part of the taxes being raised when it comes to that?
Well, there's all kinds of efforts to make sure that the people of all stripes and all financial levels pay taxes. We talk about it, but when we get around to having tax decreases or tax increases, the group that have the most money tend to have continuing or increasing numbers of loopholes that allow them to have a nominal tax rate, which is not the tax level which they pay. So there are significant numbers of billionaires who, with their wise tax consultants, end up paying very low tax rates,
so,
lower than income earners.
Right.
You know, like you and I used to be.
So the people who are going to take on the brunt of that military spending, again, middle class people in this country who can really least afford it. And it's also, Sandy, going to mean they have to cut other places. They're not going to just continue to be able to build the deficit, are they?
Well, my point about military expenditures and deficits is that...
They don't matter?
Well, no, that we end up having deficits as the alternative to raising taxes. And particularly when we have the need to spend more money on the military, we never talk about raising taxes to spend money on the military. That just comes out of a deficit. When we want to raise money to have child daycare or food stamps, then we worry about the size of the deficit. So it's the nature of the political discourse and the political third rail that's associated with defense expenditures.
You know, and I've always said, doesn't matter whether it's Democrat or Republican, they're in unison when it comes to that. Sam, who do we have on the line?
Matt's calling from Janesville.
Hey, Matt, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Hey, good morning. Thank you so much for the platform.
Thank you for listening.
I hear you guys talking about the election and stuff. I live in Wisconsin, and I got 12 mail-in ballots.
You got what?
12. I got 12 mail-in ballots for the presidential election.
Are there some? You're in trouble with this one?
Yeah. There's. I think maybe you're too close to the mic. Maybe or there's
yeah.
a there's a.
Go ahead. Let's try it again.
Sorry about that. I said when the last presidential election at my house down in Rock County, I got 12 mail-in ballots.
12 mail-in ballots. Okay,
yeah,
so once again,
12 mail-in ballots
once again, you aren't paying attention to what the topic we're talking about. And it would be great if you would pay attention to the conversation we're having. You want to talk about mail-in ballots, and you wound up...
Sorry, I'm listening on the web. I'm 5 minutes behind you. I'm a little apologized.
We weren't even talking about that 5 minutes ago.
I
hit your app, it comes up what you were talking to. You guys were talking about.
So he's probably talking about something Matt Flynn was... No? Okay. So, no, sir. We're talking about the...
military budget.
And those kinds of things.
Well, so. The 12 mail-in ballots, were they all in your name?
Six were in mine and six were in my wife's name.
And they were sent to you by whom?
The clerk of courts.
Uh-huh. And how many of them did you use to vote?
Maybe we should have used all 12, but we only used one. And I didn't use any of them. I went in and voted in person. Actually,
so just for the sake of clarity, are you stating that all of these there was shenanigans that went on in the election?
Well, you know, I would really like somebody to look into how many mail-in ballots were counted, And how many extra were
they've actually looked into that twice.
Extra that they sent out. There's no reason I should have got 12 mail-in ballots.
Do you think everybody got 12 mail-in ballots?
I called the state assembly and they said it was all linked to Facebook, and they sent out extra ballots to people that they thought were Democratic.
All right, okay. We got to go to break. Thank you very much for the call. Okay. Got to go to break. Sandy, we'll respond to that on the other side. Nah. If it's worthy of it. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. You know, Sandy, and Sandy Williams is here. It's Fridays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, our last caller, you know, he, bless his heart, he just is one of those people who is a dittohead. Right? You know, Russ Limbaugh used to have dittoheads, meaning...
Like, boss?
Yeah. Hey, whatever you say, right?
Yeah.
You do the thinking for me, and I'll just say ditto. A lot of people like that, right?
Well, yes. And, you know, it's just an interesting story he has to tell. I don't know whether it's a story. You know, you have to kind of try to figure it out. But all I know is that the level of analysis on this past election, the number of audits that were done, the number of recounts that were done, there's an ongoing analysis now by Mr. Gabelman. I'm reluctant to call him Justice Gabelman. Gabelman is demonstrably partisan. He makes no pretense now of being nonpartisan whatsoever. He goes to Mar-a-Lago, for instance, which is a suggestion that he's got a partisan bent. And he's not been able to announce a single thing coming out of his investigation so far. Now, either he's sitting on a pile of juicy information, or, much more likely, he has found nothing. But he has found $686,000 of taxpayer money, which has so far been funding him in his ongoing process to try and keep going an investigation so that people who are partisan can continue to say that there's an ongoing investigation in Wisconsin into the big voter fraud.
Sandy, let's do this. Who do we have on the line, Sam?
L.A. Tom is calling.
Oh, what's going on, L.A. Tom? How you doing, man?
Good morning. First off, we the people are supposed to be the government. And FDR, I am a proud FDR Democrat. I would love for the American people to just go and find a block of wood and keep hitting their head against it. And just keep hitting your head against it. Because the definition of insanity is doing the same thing, expecting a different result, as we know. But this is so insane. It's like if I gave you $5, Earl, and we're in business together, and I go and I just give it to somebody else, and I come back and say, okay, well, where's my $5? I thought you were investing it in something. Oh, no. We're fighting a war over there. So, therefore, we're going to give that $5 to them without getting anything back. I just cannot believe that we, the taxpayers, can pay this money into our government. And all we're getting back is Raytheon and the defense contractors getting richer and richer. And the billionaires that pay nothing in taxes. But yet we, the people, the people that pay the money in that should be getting something back from the money, such as housing, health care, education. We're not getting those things, and we're paying the money. So please, everyone, go get your head against the wall, because you're not doing anything for yourself, and you're allowing for them just to take your money. You know, think about it. Every time you pay money to your taxes. All you got to do is think in your head, military-industrial complex, military-industrial complex. I don't even mind paying the actual soldiers $100,000 a year if that's what it takes. But the military-industrial complex?
So Tom, listen to this.
Billions of dollars?
Even before the war, the Pentagon was slated to receive at least $7.3 trillion over the next decade. That was already in the bank before this war even came into existence. That was already guaranteed. And now you're talking an additional, even under the Build Back Better program, it was another $1.7 trillion.
We need people like Smugly Butler that came across and said, no profit on war. That's what we need. We need somebody in the Congress to stand up and say, no profit on war.
Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call. It's not going to happen, is it?
Tom, I'd have to say, Tom, you and I agree. I would use different ways to describe it, but absolutely. We've got the American public has to make the military and military budget, our defense budget, something that is right on the table to be discussed politically and to be argued about with respect to the amount of money that would be expended there. And we need to have much more transparency about how we go about making all of our purchases. William Proxmire, quite a while ago, was kind of a goofy Wisconsin U.S. senator, but he used to spend a lot of time analyzing the defense budget to find waste in it, and he could find, the golden toilet. I remember that was one of the things he found.
You buy a hammer, and the hammer costs $10,000.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We just need to make the military budget something that is not off limits and needs to be part of an analysis as to where we spend our money, a triage for where are we better spending the money? Should it be educating the next generation or buying more jets?
Sandy, you and Tom both 100% correct, but what are the chances of that happening? Nil.
I don't know. Because maybe
you think
at some point
all of a sudden wake up.
Well, we might get tired of it. I don't know. I think there's a little more discussion going on. The last guy in the world I would want people to listen to or watch is Tucker Carlson. But Tucker Carlson seems to be standing up for a different position with respect to our foreign policy. So maybe the right and the left might converge on saying, let's get more rational about how we choose our enemies and how we decide how we're going to comport ourselves in the world, and should we be policing the world? My father was, I'm sure, an isolationist during the 30s, and isolationism was kind of a Republican position in that point in time. But I think we might become something like, I don't mean to step back from international affairs and internationalism, but we might decide that it's not our place, that Pax Americana, it does not really exist, and that it is not America's place to run around the world and police every country to determine how they regulate their internal politics. And in particular, we might stop saying that that's what we do and then running around and clearly doing something quite different than that.
Sandy, you use the term pick our enemies. That's a lot. In what you just said, there's a lot to unpack in that. Because that's what we're doing. We're going around picking nations and saying, this is our enemy.
Right.
Those nations aren't coming to us and saying, we're your enemy. We're the ones.
Yeah, once we pick them as an enemy, they do decide we are their enemy, right? Because that's what happens.
Yeah.
And we're just doing this. We do it, and it's an extremely expensive problem in terms of deciding we have enemies. And it has a great deal to do with our position in the world and with the world generally.
All right, we got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. It ain't too bad the way you